Hello, welcome to BitNote. This is David Collins, and we'll be talking about video games and video game music. Thanks again to BeatFox for that music there. I haven't been giving him credit for that recently, but, well, it's hard to give him credit every single show. Let's start things off with a tune from a game that I really, really like, and if you guys are interested, it's really easy to play too. It's a free game, but it contradicts what most people think that just because free it's not worth anything, because believe me, this is worth something. Great tune from a great game. That was the Cave Story theme, also known as Plantation due to one of the levels it appears in, from the video game Cave Story. Now, Cave Story, boy, this is not a regular game that just was made by some studio, and it's not even to some extent made by indie developers, although you could technically apply the term. It is made by a guy called Daisuke Amiya, or commonly known as Pixel, a Japanese guy who basically developed this entire game in his free time over a course of a couple of years. It was a labor of love, really. I mean, there's not really any other way to describe it. He wasn't trying to get huge amounts of money. He clearly wasn't doing it from an ego point of view because he was a very shy and humble person. And the truth is that he just released it completely free on the internet just for people to play and enjoy. And I mean, it was amazing. It became kind of a smash hit. I mean, part of it was because of its nostalgia factor. It was released in the mid-noughties, and it seemed to evoke a lot of atmosphere from early, like, Nintendo and classic early 90s platformer games. But the truth was, it had so much atmosphere, it was its own thing. You played it, basically, you were this guy, and you suddenly found yourself in a cave, hence the term Cave Story, I suppose, and you start working your way around, and at first the enemies are really at you because you can't shoot them or anything, but you steal a gun, actually. It's not as bad as that in the actual game, though. The guy was sleeping and you didn't seem to be able to wake him up. But the point is, you fight your way through these monsters, and then you end up in this strange village populated by these creatures called the Minimag, or sugar. When you're used to reading the phrase all the time, you sort of forget how to actually pronounce it. But the Minimag are this sort of race or civilization of these sort of bunny folk, and it turns out that apparently they're being threatened by this evil scientist who's stealing them. And then it starts getting even more depthful than that. I mean, the story is just brilliantly exposed. It doesn't shove you all the story at once. You often hear conversations before you completely understand them. But you gradually learn that you're on this island and that there's this scientist, and then there are also these who's evil and these other scientists who are trying to help, and then there's this guy who's searching for help. And basically, you don't really say anything and you're kind of wrapped up trying to figure things out, trying to figure out what designs the scientist has on these mini magma and exactly what's going on and how you can help. But the game, it just has so much going for it. For the gameplay, for instance, you jump. There's a whole load of... The gameplay is just a lot of fun, you know. It's frantic. You've got lots of enemies, lots of different enemies. You get different weapons to deal with them. And each weapon, I mean, you know, if you shoot enemies, little yellow triangles drop out of them. Why is it in video games when you collect stuff, they're always yellow? But anyway, you give these yellow little tokens. They upgrade your gun. But if you get hit by an enemy, the gun downgrades. So it's kind of funny. You have to upgrade your gun so you can defeat the enemies. But then when your gun is really powerful, that's when you got to watch out the most so that you don't get hit and becomes powerless again. Except there's this one gun where essentially it'll become less powerful as it upgrades, so you have to shoot enemies and then frantically try to avoid all the yellow tokens that go spewing forth from it. But that's actually one of the fun things. It's a labor of love. There's so many details, so many subtleties, fun conversations, just... And the characters, it's like there's nothing you can immediately put your finger on and say, this is what works, this is what makes the game. There's nothing. It's a blend of the characters, the story, the atmosphere, and the feeling it takes place in a fantasy world. But it's not a defined fantasy world. There aren't any, well, they are dragons, actually, but that's a side point. It's not like a genre thing. It's like this world, we suddenly get an insight into this world inside some guy's mind, and it takes a bunch of things from various things, but in its end, it's its own expression. It's this own world, somewhat mystical, somewhat fantastic, but at the same time, somewhat, you know, you're on this floating island, but at the same time, it's like you're not being distracted by all the fantasy. You're just clearly one person who's just trying to figure things out as best as he can, and well, most of the time it just involves running, gunning right through these worlds and all these crazy designs and these cute monsters and these... I mean, it has a sense of humor, it has a sense of fun, and it just hit a lot of fans and players really hard because it was just to suddenly have this gem pop up from nowhere, with every single element just combined so well. And a full game. I mean, it could play you like 5 hours, and when you finally finish and get to the end credits, you're thinking, it felt like a complete experience. And that's something even professional games sometimes forget. You're not making... Games, by definition, do contain a bunch of components, but you're not trying to make a bunch of components and then automatically you'll have the game. It's like a painting or like any piece of art. When you put the components together, it's all about what you're trying to express, how it all comes together, about the whole being greater than the sum of its parts. And that's something that no matter what you're making, whether video games or everything, it's just about expressing yourself. And I think that that guy in Japan, he had something in his head and he just got it in. He didn't even really know programming that well at that time, but he learned from a friend and made a few games, and I think here he certainly made something special. An independent game studio later took an interest in Cave Story and actually made a version of it for both the Wii and DS, with a revamped version coming for the 3DS. But whatever your interest is in, play the game. If you have a PC, just look it up. It's got some Japanese name as well, Dokuso Montegari, I forget how you pronounce it. But if you look it up and download this completely free labor of love, I can assure you, you won't regret it. So, let's move on to another Japanese game, although this is made by a slightly more established studio. Well, in fact, it's actually from a studio rather than just a single guy in his free time. But remember, just because you don't work with a studio doesn't mean you can't find ways to express yourself. But on that note, let's move on. We'll be right back. And that was the Professor Layton's theme by Tomohito Nishiura from Level 5. And of course, that game is Professor Layton and the Curious Village, also by Level 5, of course. Well, yeah, it's a studio development. Professor Layton is actually a really popular video game series, largely for the Nintendo DS. It's, let me put it this way, it's a Japanese development. It's, you're essentially this English professor with a young apprentice, and you basically have all these strange, find yourself in all these strange mysteries, and every single mystery involves solving a bunch of really, really small puzzles. Now, you might think, okay, puzzles? What sort of puzzles? Well, you know the way that you might look up in a magazine, or maybe when you got a kid's book, it'll throw you these brain teasers, and some of the puzzles are very simple ones, like, here's a bunch of lines on a page, how many triangles can you find? And other times it's slightly more tricky, it'll tell you this little story and say, you know, something like, how does the detective know that it was lying? Well, not really, like, or, you know, there's the classic ones about, you know, trying to get, you know, a wolf, hen, and a bag of grain across the river, and you can't leave, you know, the you can't leave, like, the wolf with the hen, and you can only travel one at a time. I mean, all these sorts of, like, brain teasers, sometimes even stories. And you've got to figure out what the answer is, basically. And that's what these games are all about. I mean, there's usually a background story about, you know, something that's going on, an overarching mystery, a little plot, and some very nice animation, which is surprising, because you've got a Nintendo DS. You're not expecting something animation to pop up on that screen. But, you know, you'll... Nearly every game contains over 100 little puzzles, and you have to talk to towns to different. You have to find them in different places. Puzzles are everywhere. I mean, that you find puzzles in chandeliers, for flip's sake. I mean, you're looking around for things, and you find puzzles in window panes. I mean, you basically keep tapping around on the screen with the stylus, and either you talk to someone, and maybe they'll give you a bit of plot, but more likely they'll give you a puzzle and a plot, or you talk around in items, and you might get hint coins that'll help you solve puzzles, or else just get puzzles directly themselves. It's a really fun game if you really like these sort of puzzles, and that's its whole strength, because the puzzles are really, really clever. Sometimes what'll happen is it's a straightforward logic puzzle. Other times they'll give you something a little tricky and you have to work it out. And a lot of puzzles work on the basis, they give you a puzzle that seems to have a straightforward answer. Then you got to catch yourself, you got to realize, okay, what's their real agenda here? I mean, for instance, in one of the puzzles, and this is towards the end of the game, they say, you've got a big bag full of 7 balls, each or one of them is weighing 200 grams. One of them weighs over 100 grams. One of them weighs 100 grams. You've got a scales. How many times must you use the scales to figure out which is the lighter ball out of this bag of, like, 7 of these balls? Now, it's tricky because throughout the game, there are these challenges where you have to use these scales. But, of course, it turns out the answer is you don't need to use a scale any time because you can just figure it out manually using your hands. So it's a lot of little tricks and diversions like this, and that's what makes it a real challenge because it's making you actually think. And the great thing about the game is it doesn't force you to solve every single puzzle. I mean, you can just, you know, because if you really like them like I do. But you basically have the option to just... it's usually set up in a way so that you can not solve a bunch of puzzles and still get through to the end of the game. And that's pretty much fun because, especially old classic style adventure games, often someone would make good progress and get stuck on a single puzzle. And they'll go, oh, how do you solve this one? I mean, do you have to push the cannon? Do you have to get the fish? Like I said, or do I have to use the Tippex on the fence or whatever? And the truth of the matter is that it's just. I mean, it might be a simple puzzle, it might be just a simple overlook, maybe they didn't pick up a single item, and there might be many reasons why someone's not getting this puzzle, but the fact is, because they can't get the puzzle, they can't move forward in the game. So, Professor Layton does a pretty smart thing. It just has multiple puzzles, and as long as you solve most of them, you can pretty much get through to the ending, which I think is great. It also allows you to have hint coins, where you can get 3 hints for each puzzle. It'll give you a lower score at the end, but, you know, you can do that. And, like I said, and you can leave the puzzle and just come back to it later. So it really reduces the frustration, which is great because it gives you the mental challenge. I mean, you see, the alternative is just that they make all the puzzles a lot. It allows them to keep the puzzles challenging without worrying that a couple of people aren't going to end up completing the game because they can't solve them. Of course, with every game, there'll be people who don't give up halfway, quitters. But, you know, you gotta make the game believing that those who will get through the whole thing will be well rewarded and feel they've had a challenge. If a game's too easy, then people will wonder why they're even playing. We're actually going to move on to a really interesting song at this stage. Now, one thing you may have listened, if you listened to me a fair bit, firstly, thank you very much. Much appreciated. But secondly, you'll notice that the songs I play have one general thing in common. You rarely ever hear them on the radio. In fact, that's kind of one of the reasons I've got this show. I want to take gems, brilliant music, brilliant pieces of music, hidden in games that people may love but have never, but they never have the chance to go onto the actual radio and play them and have people actually listen to them. I mean, I think this is almost a missed opportunity, to be honest. I mean, there are a lot of really talented, great video game music tracks. There's even a video game live concert that goes around the place playing video game music using a full orchestra. And I mean, I think I look over at movies and say, and there are a lot of movies and say, there's a lot of times when a movie might be released and might have a great soundtrack, and the soundtrack is in the charts, and then it's on the radio. I mean, everything from like The Breakfast Club with, you know, Don't You Forget About Me to, you know, more recent ones like the Spider-Man movies or whatever. I mean, it's like, these movies actually have songs that are on the radio. But when a video game comes out, even if it's got a song made by a talented composer, I mean, you know, it still doesn't really go out anywhere outside of just a CD release, which no one really pays attention to. It doesn't hit the charts. It doesn't go on the radio. And I think that's kind of disappointing because, for one thing, I mean, even if you're just a bean counter in a video game studio, you want your games to make money, and having them on the music on the charts would be a huge advertisement. But for some reason, it just hasn't taken off, and it's certainly not due to the lack of quality music out there. I don't know, maybe the systems aren't in place, or I couldn't even guess. I've certainly heard a lot of great tracks I think should be on the radio. But having said all that, and having agreed that maybe this would be a good idea for some people, I'm about to contradict myself by playing a song that has been on the radio. Now, in all fairness, it's not directly from a video game, so I'm kind of cheating. Not the first time I've cheated with video game music, but probably not the last. But let me take you back to the early 90s once again, as we often go when talking about video games. It's 1994, and the Ambassadors of Funk are inspired by Mario's music and make an entire album called Super Mario Compact Disco, which contains basic remixes and reversions of songs from, and tunes from various Mario games. I mean, this is the early 90s when Mario is really popular again. I mean, you know, of course, you probably know Mario, the whole Italian plumber with the red hat with M written on it, just in case you've ever forgotten his name and you're looking up and going, wait, M, what was it, M again? Oh, Mario, right. So they basically released an entire album of his songs, and it was only meant for distribution in Japan because, you know, Japan is, for a start, that's where Mario was made, and video games are always more popular in Japan, blah de blah de blah. But for some reason that I actually haven't figured out, maybe the answer's out there, one of those songs from the album suddenly somehow made it all the way to the UK and Ireland, and not only got broadcast on the radio, but made it up to number 7 in the music charts. And I mean, this was a big deal. I mean, for me at least. I mean, suddenly having this tune that I'd known about and played, and then suddenly hearing it on the radio. You know, before I talk more about it, why don't we play the track itself? You know, some of you may remember it, but and it might bring back flashback, but in any event, it's hard to forget.
trip, and I'm rejuvenated and I remixed. I took planes, trains, and automobiles, and for real got ill. In Brazil, I'm the Wizard of Oz while on tour, and got war in Singapore, and I'm eating sushi in Japan, but there ain't no place like Super Mario Land.
And that was Super Mario Land from the Ambassadors of Funk, with remix music from Super Mario Land from the Game Boy, not Super Mario World, just in case some of you are confused, which was composed by Hirozaku Tanaka. And boy, I mean, it was just so much fun finding something that you played on your Game Boy, and even with the fun version of Mario on it, to suddenly find that this music had been taken up and made into a rap, which seemed so legit at the time. You know, back then I'm not sure I ever fully understood rap music, and I think the things are the same these days. But the point is, it was fun, we enjoyed it, and it seemed almost like the world of adults were suddenly saying, yes, video games were indeed fun. You kids are not wasting your time by playing them the whole time. Speaking of that, let's move on to our last track, and this is something, boy. This is from a game called Another World, or also in America known as Out of This World, because apparently Another World was the name of a sitcom over there. It was a game by Eric Chahi. It was completely developed by him back in the early 90s. The music is actually by Jean-François Freitas. And, oh boy, I mean, This is a game that has so much atmosphere. This is a game that basically you dive in. You're basically play the scientist and you're running a standard accelerated particle experiment when lightning strikes and suddenly you're in another world. Literally, it feels it. Multiple moons, strange creatures. And it's not a fast-paced game. You're not like floating from platform and bouncing and everything. You are taking each step means something. When you run, it means you're frantic. You grab a gun, but it's not like some superpower thing. You have to use it and know it as well as you can. It felt like such a cinematic game, and it mixed the genres too. It was at times frantic gun, but also other times it was quite a puzzler. It was a game I loved. It was in some games a game I wanted to make back then and back when I was a kid, and it just, the amount of atmosphere, the amount of love. I mean, we're talking earlier about Cave Story, a game made by a single guy that was a labor of love. Even though Another World was made as a commercial effort, same thing applies. This was someone expressing something unique that took place in an alien world where crazy things happened. You had to make a bid for your freedom, and you basically... And part of me wondered, you know, as I was playing as Lester, the main character, as I was trying to make my way through, I wondered, would Lester ever get home? Would he ever just suddenly... I mean, the circumstances, the freak accident got him there. I mean, surely it seems so improbable. Would there be ever a way for him to get home? And the truth is, well, I'm not going to tell you the truth, but I am going to play the music from the end of the game, and maybe that'll... Yeah. Thank you for listening. This has been David Collins with BitNote.